This is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Test. This is rock and roll. Time to rock it from the Delta to the DMZ. Is that me or does that sound like an Elvis Presley movie? Viva Da Nang. Oh, Viva Da Nang. Da Nang me, why don't they get a rope and hang me? Hey, is this a little too early for being that loud? Hey, too late. It's 0600. What's the O stand for? Oh my God, it's early.
Oh my God, it's really not early. 8:07 here on the West Coast, 10:07 in the Central Time Zone, where the chef comes from. So, chef, good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Wait, say that again because I can't hear you.
Good morning.
It doesn't sound right.
Well, I'm on Skype, sweetheart.
Yeah, I know. All right. What's the current temperature in beautiful North Dakota?
It's minus, 20 degrees or something. Minus 25. And wind chill is minus 41.
Woo! Keeps the riffraff out, folks.
Keeps everybody out.
Keeps everybody in. That's right. That's when you like look. There's a lot of cold that you can function in, and what he's talking about, you can't. It is like, it's like crazy. You get bundled up like a snow, like a little kid going out in the snow for the first time ever. When you go outside with like only like your eyes showing, right? You look like a Martian.
Got to cover because you don't want to freeze your lungs. It's cold.
Yeah, it's cold out there. You go outside and your nose hairs freeze. You can feel them. Like, what was that? Yep, everything.
I never had a mustache with a hard on, but I do when I go outside.
Oh my God, it's just you, and you can't be outside for very long because it's like it's crazy cold. And then God forbid the wind blows. And that's when you got to make sure you have your emergency kit in your car, because your car breaks down or you go in the ditch. That'll kill you. So that's some serious stuff. Have a good sleeping bag and make sure your cell phone's charged and have a candle in there for warmth. Or, there's battery operated devices that you can make. And then this is when you make sure all the batteries are charged and ready to go. So in case you do get stuck or something, that you can survive until somebody comes and gets you.
Yes, that's true. They're called survival kits. How they call it on the news here.
Yeah.
Make sure you have a survival kit. I have one of those space blankets, the shiny silver ones.
Yeah.
I got a pair of UGG boots in there.
I don't think space blankets actually work, though. Those things are tiny, flimsy, man. You need, like, the big sheepskin, like... Yeah, that's what the Sioux did up there. I mean, they're rolling around in buffalo hides and things like that. Like, get that little space blanket bullshit out of here.
Mm.
Let's just get a piece of foil then.
I put that space blanket in my pants.
But they're little dinky things. It's 25 below. I don't need dinky. I need the Tatanka skin.
I need backup. That's all that is.
I need for my car not to break down. That's what I need.
Yeah. But, you remember that bear coat I used to have?
Yeah, I came out of big bear coat. Big, frontier looking, Theodore Roosevelt kind of coat.
Yep, full length, black bear coat. The collar went up it buried my head. It came around and buttoned in front. It was great. And I wore it New Year's Eve. My wife made me a costume to be the New Year's baby in 97. And so at midnight, I had this bear coat on, and I jumped up on the bar, and they turned the lights on. I threw the bear coat off. I was in booties, a diaper, a bonnet, and a sash. Happy New Year. And you know, bare chest and legs and stuff. And then we went out, and half the people just rolled and laughed. It just, it broke them up. The other half were so frightened, they paid their bill and left.
Kim has a great picture of that. And it was up in his restaurant. I was not there for that. But I heard about it.
Oh God, I would have loved to have you there. Because Bruce Tellman,
what
Art
was,
Simonson,
so what,
and
what year was
a couple
that?
Of guys, we what went year? To watch the fireworks.
Wait a minute, what year
and,
was that?
Oh, I was wearing my booties, and I threw the bear coat on, and that, you know, bare chest and everything, and we went down to the river and watched the fireworks.
Yeah, you're stupid. You're stupid. You get killed like that.
I was also liquored up, too.
Oh, so. There you go. That explains a lot of things about life, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Did alcohol have anything to do with this decision? Yes, it did.
Yes, of course it did.
So do you have anything that you do other than not go outside when it gets this cold?
I go down and work on leather in my shop. I've got a heater down there in the garage area, and it's really nice and warm, and you know, my hands aren't frozen. The garage itself is at about 54 degrees.
Whoa.
So that's pretty warm for me.
54
degrees, yeah. Oh. Yeah, so nothing freezes up down there. And I, you know, the space heater is perfect for me. That's a little bonus because it's right on my feet under my workbench. And so, yeah, it's good. That's what I do. And I go to the Y after the show today. Last week I went before, and I have to get up way too early for that. So I'm going to take my time and go after the rush, at, you know, when the show's over. It'll be nice. And
so when the show's over, it'll be it's 11 o'clock?
It's 41 below zero with the wind. But I have the proper clothing, and I get out right in front of the Y, throw up my handicap sticker, I pull in, get right out, 15 feet to the door, and I'm in. And then do the same in reverse, and then I get home and I'm in. And you go where you're going to go, and you make it as close to, you park as close to wherever you're going as you can, and then you truck in to the place. Because this, and it's going to be the same next week, sub-zero weather. So we have another week of this stuff coming, and it happens every year at this time. And you, it's just the way it is, man.
Yeah, see, it's this period during the weather that makes you say that that like 20 degrees above zero is warm, okay? And then you go through the summer, and then when it gets to be like 30 and stuff like that, you're like, how did I ever think 30 was warm? It's cold. And then you do this, then you do this, then you do this, and you're like, now I remember. Oh man,
you remember living by the university and until the temperature drops below freezing, every kid wears shorts to school and sneakers, and some kids even wear flip-flops if there's no snow on the ground.
I think you might be a little carried away right now. Don't get over your skis, okay? I will tell you what, my kids, I mean, it would be between, 32 and 10 degrees, and their attire didn't change that much. It was just a pair of jeans and some kind of hooded sweatshirt, and it wasn't thin, but I mean, it's, you know, as people, you get used to it. And I'm from California. Kim's not from up there. I mean, you do get used to it. But when it goes south of 10 above, that's when it gets cold, in my opinion. You can fake it up to that point. But after that, it's like there ain't no faking it, okay? There is no faking it.
Usually when it gets below freezing, there's something called the wind chill, because the wind blows here on the...
Yeah, it's flatland country.
And it's just the way it is.
It's dangerous. It's much like when you live, like when I lived in 29 Palms, you learn about the desert, and one of the things you learn is that... And this was before the days of cell phone, mind you, but, you break down, people, dead in their cars that they were going to take a shortcut from like the 10 to the 40. So they leave the 10 around Palm Springs, and they'd go north through 29 Palms and Yucca Valley and hook up with the on the 40 to go to Las Vegas. But the problem is on those shortcuts, sometimes there's not many people there, and when there's not many people and your car breaks down and you don't have a cell phone and you're elderly, sometimes that doesn't work out good. And so, I mean, these people, they'd find them dead. And so this is the kind of North Dakota version, the northern version of that event. And it's crazy. And where Kim lives is in a river valley, and the coldest weather comes down that valley for some reason. It sits in that valley, and so you'll see this like a trough coming from Canada. It's like, why? What is that thing dipping down? That's where Kim lives.
And in fact, folks, look at the weather report tonight when they do the national weather, and you'll see that Arctic
blast.
It hits us right between the eyes, between Fargo and Grand Forks. It dips down the lowest there, but you're going to see a dip even into Kansas and way below us. But we get the brunt of it. But we haven't gotten much snow this year. We got 5 inches last week, and then the wind started blowing a few days ago. And it wasn't snowing, but it called a ground blizzard. So you couldn't get out on the interstate because you couldn't see anything.
Right.
The snow was just blowing. Yeah. And you'd look up and the sun's out.
Well, that's one of the things that surprises people, and it's not, right, it's not snowing, but you have whiteout conditions because you have so much snow on the ground, and the wind's high enough that it's getting that stuff in the air. And you can't see. When you drive, you can't see. So it's like, okay, everybody needs to go home. Okay? Everybody needs to go home.
When few days ago, the wind was 30 to 50 miles an hour.
the wind in the whole Upper Plains area, I mean, that stuff gets cranking. And that's tornado country. You have all kinds of things going on. So it's it can get cold. I've got an email for you, Mac. Yeah. I listened to the hot dog segment and immediately went out and ate hot dogs. I have to tell you, I am a fan of the hot dog. I have a question for the chef. How did the hot dog become so popular in the United States? Little food history question. I love food history question, by the way.
It was brought over by German butchers. They've been eating a form of hot dog, you know, put it in a natural casing. You know, that's an intestine, right. Natural casing. They started with grinding up, chopping up beef and pork and putting it in casings and seasoning it. Right. Then they chopped it finer.
But how did it get famous? How did it get so popular in the United States?
Well, probably it was brought over German immigrants to New York. And
so you don't know.
Then,
you don't know. It's okay if you don't know. The
Let's find German immigrants brought hot dogs to the U.S.
Okay, that means you don't know. Okay. All right. So let's find out. Hot dogs. Wikipedia. Here we go. Because the hot dog's your fantasy food, so hot dog, also spelled hot dog, one word with no space, is a grilled or steamed link sausage sandwich where the sausage is served in the slit of a partially sliced bun. We know this kind of stuff. It can also be referred to as sausage. The sausage used is the Wiener Vienna sausage or Frankfurter, also a Frank. The names of these sausages also commonly refer to their assembled sandwiches. Typical condiments are mustard, ketchup, mayonnaise, relish, and common garnishes include onion, sauerkraut, chili, cheese, coleslaw, and olives. Hot dog variants include the corn dog and and the ever popular pigs in a blanket. Oh my God. The hot dog's cultural traditions include Nathan's hot dog eating contest and the Oscar Mayer Wienermobile. God almighty. Let's see. The hot dog became closely associated with baseball and American culture. These types of sausages and their sandwiches were culturally imported from Germany. Exactly what Kim said, and became popular in the United States, where the hot dog became a working class street food sold at hot dog stands and carts. The Germans making extra money. And then it became associated with baseball and American culture.
Yep.
Although particularly connected with New York City and its cuisine, the hot dog eventually became popular throughout the U.S. during the 20th century and emerged as an important part of regional cuisines, most notably the Chicago street cuisine.
Yep.
Let's see. Claims about the invention, the word Frankfurter, others credited the first serving of hot dogs, other possible origins. We don't want that. General description, natural casing, skinless hot dogs, home consumption, health effects. Hot dogs get a bad name in relative to health foods. If you're looking at some of these pictures, you'll know why. I'm just looking if there's any cultural thing that happened that said this put the hot dog on the map. But it sounds like the Germans just created hot dog stands in New York City. It became popular there. It then got served in baseball stadiums because it was easy, and then that kind of matriculated around the country.
That's it.
How about that? So I just want to ask you a question about your fantasy hot dog cart. What does it look like? Is it like the two wheels, right, with the umbrella? Is it that version?
It's four wheels. With locking wheels.
Of course.
And it has an umbrella. And there are two containers. You have a little propane thing there to keep the water hot. And you steam the dogs and you steam the buns. And then you have a little section with condiment. And I would have mustard. I'd have a little container where I put the mustard on. Like they do in New York City, you slather it on, and then I'd have onions, pickle relish, sauerkraut, and maybe some fine chili. which is it's the flavor of chili, but it's just hamburger and it's dark. And there's it's tomato based, but
we love tomatoes.
And that would be it. Maybe sell a couple of bags of chips and some canned pop, and that would be it. That would be my cart.
What would you have a name for your hot dog stand?
Probably Chunga's Revenge.
Oh my God! Come on, you haven't really thought this concept through enough. If you can't say, yeah, I've got a name for it. It's Big Kimmy's. It's Big Kimmy's Hotties or something like that.
It's the big dog's dog.
The big dog's dog. All right.
It would be a funny name. I would have to think about it for sure. But I have the cart designed in my head and what I want. And they cost about, $5,000 to $8,000, self-contained. And you could, keep it stored somewhere. Like in New York City, there's one place where all the carts are stored in different sections of the city, but a big garage where they clean their carts when they come home and then load it up with water and product and head out onto the streets. Yeah.
Here's an article. How the hot dog became so popular in American culture. Coney Island Boardwalk gives way to a textured cement and traditional Coney Island haunt, such as Ruby's and the Cha-Cha, celebrate their last summer at the Shuttle, blah, 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 blah. Although Coney Island is the epicenter of hot dog history, the dog did not originate on the boardwalk. The lowbrow snack is the bastard American descendant of sausages brought to New York, to the New World, by immigrants from Germany and Austria.
Yep.
Sausage vending was a relatively inexpensive home business for upwardly mobile immigrants, and by the 1860s, the strolling meat purveyors were a fixture of urban street scenes. On September of 1894, the Duluth News Tribune described the visit to Chicago. This is 1894. More numerous than the lunch wagon is the strolling salesman of Red Hots. This individual, clothed in ragged trousers, a white coat, and a cook's cap, and unlimited cheek, obstructs the night prowler at every corner. He carries a tank in which are swimming and sizzling hundreds of frankfurters or wieners. These mysterious denizens of the steaming deep are sold for 5 cents, which modest charge includes an allowance of horseradish or some other tear-producing substance. That's in 1894 in Duluth, Minnesota.
How about that? Yeah, and that's another place in the winter that you got to be so butch to be outside. So
yeah, right on the water. Poo. Although Germans traditionally served bread with sausages, our modern hot dog bun may in fact be a product of Coney Island. A 1904 obituary for Ignaz Frischmann described the Austrian baker as an innovator who experimented until he invented the perfect Vienna roll, with which to supply Coney Island hot dog vendors. How about that? The hot dog bun originally entitled the Vienna roll.
I'll be the one.
There you go. More than you ever want to know about a hot dog. Right?
I have one question for you.
Yes.
How was Wiener Schnitzel?
I didn't go. I haven't, honestly, Kim. I've
been busy.
Oh my God! Next week, I go to the General Officer Summit, General Officer Symposium for the Marine Corps. Got invited to go present post traumatic winning back there, and post traumatic winning is about 2 hours and 45 minute presentation, and we only have 50 minutes to present it. So it's like, okay, what do we include? And then it's different than what I taught. So, when you do something different, you have to have it committed to memory, and which takes time. And so there's multiple people involved in it. So I've been working on that. And then the other thing is, on a daily basis, more and more stories get people call me and write to me talking about the effect that that had on them and somebody else whose life they touch. And it's humbling and mind-blowing at the same time. That it's and so cool to see people who, you know, who've watched this thing and really didn't know how to help. But now that they've got some kind of rules, some guidelines to show people, they've got, you know, things that they can point to and say, hey, we need to do these. It's almost like they feel empowered to go sit down and talk with people. So I haven't had time to go. I haven't had time to go to Wiener Schnitzel.
Don't worry about that. What you're doing is so important. Nothing matters.
It's cool.
Now, where is this presentation?
Quantico. So I'll fly on, I think, Tuesday. Do it on Wednesday. And then I'll spend a little time in the D.C. area. And Johnny Boy, Finn, and Susie are back there, so I'll see them. And my cousin, her son is at OCS right now. So, yeah, so I might get a chance to see him, too. So I'm excited about that. So, a lot of it, it'll be mostly, you know, a lot of work, talking to people and getting them to understand what we're doing. And also getting them hooked into the feedback that's coming out of the 2nd Marine Division in North Carolina. And that's pretty exciting. So anyway, that's what's going on.
Well, you got your work cut out trimming the presentation down to 50 minutes.
Yeah, and the other thing you have to do is, and you can't give it in such a breathless way that people are looking like, what is he saying? Like, what is this? So, you know, so you cut it to where you can fit it, and then you have to say, no, we've got to cut more because I can't do it like that. It's going to sound stupid. So, anyway, I'm still, you know, this is a fairly long article about the hot dog. I'm trying to see if there is, talk about all the different varieties. That have, you know, from deep fried hot dogs in Texas to, different kind of meats up in Alaska and all, how it's kind of, everybody's embraced it and kind of made it their own. So it's kind of interesting. Listen to this. 4 years after coming to America, this guy named Handworker had founded an empire. Okay, hold on. Who is this Handworker guy? Is he the guy that started Nathan? Kim's the one that told me to go to Nathan's Famous Hot Dogs in New York City.
Yes.
So here's a guy named Handworker. Immigrates from Poland, got a job at Feltman's Restaurant in 1916. After working there for a year, Handworker saved enough money to open his own hot dog stand. The hot dogs were produced, according to his wife, Ida's recipe, and Handworker cooked the dogs on a 12-foot grill. When the subway increased traffic to Coney Island in 1920, he was poised to capitalize on the low-budget hordes. Four years after coming to America, Handworker had founded an empire. Between 1930 and 1950, Nathan sold up to 50,000 hot dogs a day.
Holy moly. Wow.
Nathan's dogs are now sold internationally under the slogans America's Favorite Hot Dog, although I prefer an older Nathan's slogan, from a hot dog to a national habit. So, you know, it's kind of interesting, but, you know, that guy had his head in the game. You know, he paid attention to the city planning. Saw the new subway, where it was going to go, and, you know, a lot of people with not a whole lot of money going to be on the subway, and they like hot dogs. So let's get out there and let's sell a few. So anyway, the history of the hot dog today. Here's another question for you. I have a question about cooking hot dogs. In my family, it is a tradition to slice the dog. Does the chef think that's a good idea or a bad idea?
Well, if you slice it, I assume that you're going to grill it. That's a good idea because it covers more surface space of the hot dog and it cooks faster. And I've seen places and I've eaten hot dogs that have been split in half and thrown on a flat top griddle. And, they're great. But to slit them and boil them, you let all the juices out. So, you drop a hot dog in boiling water or you steam it, then the casing keeps all the juices in. So when you bite into the hot dog, you get a little snap from that casing and then the juices come out of the hot dog and make it very decadent.
Nice.
And
why wouldn't you make the same argument if you're going to grill it? You're just allowing the juices to leave if you're grilling it.
Well, it sears the hot dog. You slice a hot dog and right. You throw the sliced part down on the grill. It's cold, and that heat sears it just like you're cooking a steak. It sears it. The juices don't run out on a steak. They don't run out on a hot dog because you're searing that flat spot. Okay?
Yeah, but you're still losing all the juices, though. No?
No, you're not. No, because
well, how could you not if you lose if you cut the skin?
If you cut the skin when it's cold.
Yes.
The juices haven't started to flow.
And then you're going to sear it, and that seals them in?
It sears them in when okay. You cut it. And
so how do you sear a hot dog? Because doesn't that mean burn it?
No. Well, it'll burn it if you have the heat up all the way and you walk away from it like you walk away from a whole hot dog
right.
On a and forget it. Turn it all the time. They cook fast, so you just want to sear it and caramelize it and get it a little dark, not black, just a little dark, and then flip it over, put it aside on a part of the grill that isn't on but it's warm, and if that's how you're cooking dogs fast, okay.
All right. It's such a thin piece of meat to try to sear. It seems like you're gonna. That's why I didn't understand. Okay. All right. I think it's a pretty delicate art, though. Okay.
At home, when your mom is gonna cook some hot dogs for you, and she cuts them and throws them in a frying pan.
Yeah.
She stands over. She has a half a dozen or so, depending how many dogs she's cooking. She stands over him. She, by the time she gets all the hot dogs in, waits a minute, then she starts flipping them over to the other side, and they'll be caramelized, and the juices will be seared in. And there you go. So it's perfectly all right. And another benefit from cutting your hot dog like that, if it's you put it in a bun, you have your bun sliced, you put the exposed cut up so you have a little trough there to put your condiments in, the center of the hot dog. Hey, baby, holds more stuff.
There you go. The important thing, it holds more stuff. Another email. We've actually talked about this before. Mac, I'm wondering if the chef has ever heard of the fried bologna sandwich, and if so, if there's any cooking pointers that he has. We've discussed the fried bologna sandwich before.
It's a spectacular cut of meat. The thing about a fried bologna sandwich is you don't want the bologna too thin. You want about at least a quarter of an inch of bologna. So when you go to your butcher or your meat market at your grocery store, you say, you have them pull out the big loaf of bologna, the big tube, and you say, cut about quarter inch slices. I'm going to fry it.
No. And, you know, I just that was like an event. You just pulled the Oscar Mayer. You're like chefing us, man. We used to use the Oscar Mayer stuff. It was thin as thin. Thin. And then if you were going to do it, you had to use two pieces.
Four. You know how thin that bologna is from Oscar Mayer? It's, you know.
You're making the Bob's, almost you're making the Bob's, favorite. The Bob's Big Boy version of the,
you have to cut the bologna thick. And some people, I've seen it, a half an inch thick.
Whoa.
Yes. Whoa,
I've never had right. one. I've never had one of those. I got to try that. So, I mean, wouldn't it be better just to go, get it kind of a roll of bologna and cut it yourself?
Well, yeah, but a roll of bologna weighs about 10 pounds. That's a lot of bologna.
I don't need that much bologna.
So you go to the butcher, you have them cut quarter inch slices, and, you know, you look at them, you see quarter, and maybe you want a half an inch slice. That's up to you. But, and then you preheat your pan to about medium hot, medium high, and then you just throw the bologna in, and you cook it, and then you flip it, and you have a pretty hearty bun, or you can have one of a Wonder Bread bun if you want. I like a little more bread, like a Kaiser roll, or something a little more substantial.
That's pretty high end, though. I'm going to tell you, you're heading towards delicacy at that point.
No. Because a big chunk of bologna, it's a big round, it's a circle, so you're going to have bologna hanging out on the ends of the bun. So you don't want a monster bun, but you want a bun that's big enough to cover most of the bologna and holds up. And
now let me ask you a question. When you fry the bologna, do you like a little char? Do you like a little sizzle, a little crust on your bologna, or do you like just warm, soft bologna?
No. I like it. I like a little crust, but I don't want it black. You get me?
I'm with you.
You want a dark brown. You want to caramelize that. You know, there's a lot of juices in bologna when it's heated up, just like a dog. And so you want to caramelize each side. And don't forget to peel the bologna. You know, a lot of times there is always a casing around the bologna.
Around the edge, right?
Yeah.
So I never peel that. I just, that goes down with everything else.
Well, suit yourself. But I recommend when you cut a quarter inch.
Well, wait a minute. You're talking about deli bologna. I'm like, Kathleen bought Oscar Mayer bologna. So I've never been a deli bologna guy. So I've never had to peel shit, man. Oscar Mayer doesn't put that stuff on the edge of their bologna.
No, because it's already taken off.
Right.
They once it's been cooked, they take the casing off and slice it and package it and send it to Kathleen's favorite grocery store. And that's how that works. And no, of course you don't get casing in sliced bologna. It's already been dealt with. But when you go to a deli, what they do is they say, how much do you want? And so they'll tear off that casing and then slice it for you, and then you're good to go. But my first venture into a bologna sandwich, Mac, get a pound of quarter-inch sliced bologna. That gives you four sandwiches.
A pound of quarter-inch sliced bologna. All right.
Yeah.
Has bologna got fancy now? Is there like 78 different variations of bologna that you can buy?
Well, my favorite bologna is the Italian bologna called mortadella.
Oh, I've heard of that, and I'm a hick.
It's got chunks of lard in it, white flecks of lardo, and some of them have black peppercorns and or pistachios, pieces of pistachio, and that's called mortadella. Otherwise, it's you can have different types of spice bologna. You'd have to check with whatever the butcher likes to make, because there's more things than just straight up bologna.
That's what I got to say. Another question. Mac, very, very fascinating discussion this morning about ghetto food. Can we talk about lamb chops, though, please? Of course we can. I like thick lamb chops. And yes. Does the chef have a certain way that he likes to prepare those? It's a little bit more delicate beef, pork, excuse me.
Yeah. Lamb, it's lamb.
And
beef or pork.
So how should I cook it for the best results? I can either grill it, I can fry it, God forbid, and I can even bake it. So as a lamb lover, what would he recommend to make the best lamb? Kind of interesting question.
Well, if we're doing lamb chops, the lamb chop has to be at least 1.5 to 2 inches thick to get the best result for me. There's a bone involved in that. So your butcher has to cut them for you. You season them with salt, pepper, rub a little olive oil on it, or whatever your seasoning blend is that you like. Your lamb has to be at room temperature before you cook it. Now, if you're grilling it, then you have to stand over your lamb chops, keep an eye on them. It'll take maybe, you want a medium rare lamb chop. At least that's how I like my lamb, medium rare. The longer you cook it, the tougher it becomes. You want to get a crust on the outside. So you throw your chops on. I'd say 2 minutes aside. And they should be perfectly seared. And check them with your thermostat. And see what the internal temperature should be, 120. And take them off, wrap them in foil, let them rest for about 5 minutes or so, 5, 6, 7 minutes, and then you take them and you plate them, and you take the juices that have drained out of the lamb chop, and you pour it over the lamb chop, enough for just a little dabble for each one, and then I love to serve it with mint jelly.
You go to restaurants all over the country, you know, lamb chops with mint jelly. Why does that not appeal to me?
I don't know. That's what I grew up with. First lamb chop I ever had. I was 12 years old, and my grandparents took me to this restaurant, and that's how they served it. And I've been eating it that way ever since. But now we served lamb with a raisin chutney. It were apple and raisins, a chutney with onions and spices. And I think I have the recipe somewhere, and I will send it to you so you can post it, because that is a spectacular. And that's how I eat my lamb now, is with that chutney, not with the mint jelly. But I just don't have it. I know Beth will have it. And I'll get that recipe to you this week. because that's a great question on what to serve with lamb chops. That's how I served it with my lamb loin, my lamb tenderloins at Sanders. I put a herb mixture on it. I grilled them, and it took about 4 minutes max, 3 minutes to cook them, medium rare. Wrap them in foil, put them up until they were ready for service. And then I sliced it and took care of it that way. And so that's how I did it.
Another email question. Mac, I want to go back to hot dogs because I'm a kind of a ghetto guy when it comes to food. I'm curious, the chef not only is a cooker, but he's also an eater. How do people in that Nathan's hot dog thing, how do they eat that many hot dogs?
I have no idea. After, I'd say maybe I could get a dozen down, and the whole length of time that they do 70 hot dogs or 80 hot dogs in but 20 minutes, I don't know. It just, it boggles my mind. And they don't puke. I mean, I'd be having spewing hot dogs all over myself. every once in a while, if I'm in the house on the 4th of July or I watch a rerun of the winner of Nathan's hot dog competition on the 4th of July, and I think it's a 20-minute time limit. It's not very long, Mac. And they use water. They have cups of water and the bun, the hot dog, they soak them in the water and they stuff them in their mouth.
Yeah.
And it's, how fast can you stuff a hot dog in your mouth? You know, what's the pleasure in that? Other than, oh God, I ate 84 hot dogs, man. I got the world record.
It's the
big effing deal. You know?
It's the notoriety. Come on, man. It's the notoriety. Here's another email. Mac, I was listening, but I want to make sure I heard you right. Did you say that they sold 50,000 hot dogs a day?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, that's what it said. Kim, the restaurant businessman, the owner that he is, he heard that and said, what did you say? What did you say? 50,000
yeah.
50,000 hot dogs a day. So
now they're at Coney Island, right? They're on the boardwalk at Coney Island.
Right.
And Nathan's, and when he started, hit his stride, and he does 50,000. This is within 4 years of him opening his joint. And he's doing 50,000 hot dogs a day. Now, that means that at least 25,000 people came by his hot dog stand, or 20,000 people. Some might have ordered four, or some two, or one. So, I mean, that's a lot of dogs, baby.
you know how much total revenue that throws off at 5 cents a hot dog?
Yeah.
$2,500. That's making $2,500 the hard way. And then what's your cost? How much does it cost to serve the hot dog if you're selling it for a nickel, for God's sake? They couldn't have been selling it for a nickel back then, could they?
Well, I was going to say 10 to 15 cents a piece then.
10 cents is 10,000, 15 is 12,500. That's still a lot of work for that much money. I would be curious, but yeah, that's 50,000 hot dogs a day, and again, all made possible by the Subway.
Yes, thank you, Subway.
Thank you, Subway. Yeah, you talk about one of the great inventions of the 20th century. Imagine them planning the Subway back in like 1890s is when it got planted.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, think about that. Like, look, the car wasn't even invented, and they're already planning mass transportation on the island of Manhattan. It's amazing. Yeah. I mean, honestly, when you think about that, you're like, that's astounding that they somebody had the foresight to say, and it is, I mean, it is one of the great inventions of American urban history and civil engineering and planning, because holy smokes. I mean, Manhattan would have never grown to what it is today without the subway, because of the subway, you can get so many people onto that peninsula. If they had to all come in vehicles, would never happen. Never happen.
No parking here.
Sorry. No room in the inn, man.
Yeah.
No room in the inn, man. You got to go to a stable. That's a little biblical humor right there. But when you think about it, it's like, it's crazy. And again, the hot dog, New York City, where it rose to prominence, and certainly in Chicago as well as America's second city, with a similar mass transportation, not below ground, but it was the elevated train. So anyway, all right, what are you doing this weekend? Anything exciting?
Not much.
I guess not.
No, nothing really. Just hanging out with my wife and staying up, cuddled up in the house.
I guess.
I will see what's on the movie screen today. I don't know yet. Haven't looked. So, trying to figure out what to do.
Yeah.
But
what is it?
Did you see the football games last weekend?
I did not.
Or hear about them?
I saw highlights. Looks like probably one of the great football Sundays in all of history. Both division championships go to overtime. Wow, that's crazy. I mean, both league championships go to overtime.
Yeah, and of course, I lost both my bets. I picked New Orleans, and the only reason Kansas City lost. Is because
I saw that
didn't have the ball at the coin flip because he would have taken it down just like Brady did. Uh-huh. So Brady won the coin toss and they took it down and scored. That was it.
I thought you were going to say because of the pass interference call.
Well, New Orleans got hosed because of the pass interference.
Yeah, that was crazy. But you know what? The overtime thing to me. You play the whole season. The coin flip should not determine who wins, you know, who wins. And it's like, well, it only determines it if it's I think they should play in the regular season too. Put up 10 minutes and put up 5 minutes, I don't care. If whatever period of time, but just play football during that. There is no goofy rules. You know, it doesn't matter if you go down first and score, blah, 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 blah. So anyhow, I don't like that. That was lame because you know Mahomes. He had an incredible year, and they don't even get to touch the ball because of this stupid rule. And what's the point of the rule in the playoffs?
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, you should have either a full quarter, or I think they should play a fifth quarter, and whoever wins at the end of that fifth quarter. Is the winner.
Well, I will say this. To me, the most exciting overtime in sports is the NHL. The NHL plays 3-on-3 in the regular season for, I don't know, 5 minutes. And I'll tell you what, it is end-to-end action the whole time, and it is fun to watch. And then they go to a shootout. That's in the regular season. In the postseason, they play till somebody wins. It's regular rules in overtime. Yeah. So I don't
–
you know, the NFL, honestly, in my opinion, made itself look bad. Because the Saints should be in a Super Bowl. That call was, I mean, horrible. How they don't see it, and the inability of the people that sit up above on a glaring mistake to be able to call down and say, "Hey, you need the on-field referee. We're not going to tell you what to do, but you need to look at this because it's not close." And so, to me, they could do that better. And then the coin flip thing was stupid. So I thought I mean, it's amazing after all these years that it seems like you still have these structural issues in football that screw it up. And so, to me, reviewing glaring, and I don't think
pass interference calls, you'll be able to throw a flag for a pass interference call next year in the NFL.
Well, I mean, to me, what they should do is let the guy who missed it look at it. Hey, we suggest he look at this. He's the back judge. And if he looks at that, he would have said, yeah, boom, here's the flag. That is pass interference. So it's almost like, you know, and if they look at it and they see it like, you know, it's 50-50, then no, don't do that. But the glaring ones, just eliminate the glaring mistakes. And, you know, if it's 50-50, let it go. So I don't know. Anyway. All right, sir. Well, look, stay warm.
You too. I'll have the lamb chutney for you.
Next week.
And we'll see you. And when's your speaking engagement?
Wednesday. So Wednesday back in Quantico.
This coming Wednesday?
This coming Wednesday.
Oh, good luck, baby.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's exciting. Exciting. And like I said, it'll be fun. Good to see my son and daughter-in-law and my grandson. So, and then I call him my nephew, Johnny. So, two Johnnies. So, it'll be hopefully a good trip.
I'm happy for you, buddy. All right. Way to go.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
There you have it. The Allmarine Radio Head Chef joining me next is the man, the myth, the legend himself, the one and only Michael Musselman. Don't touch that dial.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hi, this is Tim McGarry from the McGarry Mortgage Minute. Heard every Wednesday right here on Allmarine Radio, where I'll answer all your mortgage questions from home buying to home financing, from VA to conventional loans to moving in. So don't miss it, the McGarry Mortgage Minute, right here on Allmarine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. And remember, my name is McGarry, and I'm here to help.
Find all of Tim McGarry's contact information on the Read Board page at AllMarineRadio.com.
To be fully fit, you have to be physically fit. You also have to be mentally fit.
I wish that more warriors would realize how important it is that you get the psychological support that you need so that you can focus on the rest of your life.
I think it takes strength in order to admit that you have an issue, but it also takes intuitiveness of a friend, a leader, a supervisor to pick up on the signal that the soldier is having issues and needs to seek professional help in dealing with it.
It's also important for the lowest possible levels of leadership to be very supportive in helping their members get the help that they need.
When I went to get help, I had more help than I could ask for from my entire command.
It's sometimes challenging to come to a senior staff member or senior officer in the unit with a problem. There's not a commanding officer out there or a leadership staff out there that doesn't want to help. So don't hesitate. Come ask.
Learn more by visiting www.realwarriors.net or calling 1-866-966-1020.
Hundreds of thousands of veterans have taken off their uniforms and put them away, carefully packed and safely stowed. But for some veterans, the uniform isn't so easily removed. The emotions experienced while serving continue to weigh on them. Life after service is different. Many veterans find transitioning difficult, and daily life is no longer as enjoyable as it once was. Some feel overwhelmed and lost. But that uncertainty doesn't take away from their strength and courage, nor does it take away from the sense of duty veterans carry with them. The transition from service is different for everyone. If you are a veteran going through a difficult time, or know one who is, the power of one person, one connection, one act of compassion can make a difference. For free 24/7 confidential support, call the Veterans Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 or visit veteranscrisisline.com.